Siren Radio.
The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
And how true those words are even today, one might well say, in terms of where the truth is, what it's about, and so on and so forth, as we actually come to you from a whole different sort of area here. Let's just do a quick introduction. In the studio, we have the wonderful Darren Scales. How are you, Darren?
I'm very well, thank you for asking.
We also have the equally wonderful Phil Hamling-Williams. How are you, Phil?
I'm very well, thanks very much.
This is marvellous. And making her debut on the production for the first time, we've got a graduate of the media school here at the University of Lincoln, the awesome Kesha Nicklin. How are you, Kesha?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Excellent. And online, we will hopefully go live to Spain now to say, William Coles, how is it going? Where exactly are you?
I'm in Fonsagrada, Alex. I'm on the Camino.
Okay. Just allowing for that, we're having one or two slight sort of mini hitches here, but worry not, we'll get that sort of addressed before too long. I don't know if you're getting some howl around on this side of things. We're going to take a slight musical break whilst we find out what's causing that slight echo to come through in the system after a little touch of Holly Johnson. Are you okay, William?
Yes, I am.
Just chase the fade and move on in every sense of the word. Okay, let's move over to Spain. Let's find out what's taking place in terms of Spain. Why are you in Spain at present? Why have we caught you mid-pilgrimage, William Coles?
I've wanted to do the pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela for a long time, mainly for the history, for the fact that over 1,000 years pilgrims have been walking to Santiago. And for a long time, I thought that it wasn't really possible because most of the routes are over 500 miles long. But last year, I found out about the Primitivo route, which is the oldest and shortest route to Santiago de Compostela, and it's also the toughest. So I've been walking through the Cantabrian Mountains for a week now and walking through Storm Hugo, and it's been middling tough.
It sounds as though it's the equivalent, Darren, of actually having a 2.5 hour staff meeting.
I'm not sure where I'd rather be, to be honest.
Exactly. Have you ever done any pilgrimage days at all?
I've done sort of the Cairngorm stuff like that in terms of mountain trekking, not a pilgrimage itself, but. William definitely has my sympathy when it comes to hiking through storms and stuff like that.
So, Storm Hugo.
Yeah, indeed. Hugo. Yeah, very tough.
Mm. And Phil, your thoughts on this one? I feel he's suffering for all of our sins in many ways.
Well, he is, and I'm very grateful. I've just come back from Spain, from Valencia, where they were doing something completely different. They were doing the Fias Festival. Now, the Fias Festival lasts for 4 days. Its core are explosions throughout the city that occur at least every 5 minutes. Every small child has the equivalent of the bangers we used to have when we were children, which they throw around the city, including my small grandchildren. So that was all good fun. And there are amazing processions of people dressing up in the most gorgeous costumes and creating with flowers, you know, vast statues of the Madonna and Child.
Wonderful.
It's great. You must do it.
It's
fantastic.
Not now.
Well, you'll have to wait another year.
And Kasia, in Bury St Edmunds, because clearly there are all sorts of shrines in the Suffolk area, have you ever been tempted to actually do a pilgrimage, exercise sins and such like?
I haven't actually done a pilgrimage, no. I do walk around the Abbey Gardens in Bury St Edmunds, which is quite a scenic area. My brother is doing the Duke of Edinburgh this year. Which he's definitely excited about. I kind of want to know what sort of clothes William wears on these pilgrimages.
Yes, what clothes are you wearing, William?
You need really
It's Kasia's first show, she can ask what she wants.
You need really good waterproofs. It's good boots, good gaiters, and an incredibly good coat with a sort of cape to keep your rucksack dry. Most of it's been raining a lot, and during Storm Hugo, everything was saturated. Everyone got just drenched. It was like we'd jumped into a river. And, of course, we've got our scallop shell as well. That's the symbol of this Camino. And some people have it around their necks, but I tie mine to my rucksack.
Wow, so it's quite an outfit, isn't it, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very eye-catching, yeah.
Obviously, these days, with Mark Zuckerberg effectively putting up two fingers to the British government, Mark, we want you over here to talk to us. Come on now. We're not sure, but have you been Facebooking and such like, William, or have you decided to say, no, I'm on a pilgrimage, so hashtag no Facebook whatsoever?
I haven't done any Facebook yet. I'll do a posting just for you, then. Well, how about that?
You can always use Instagram, of course, or Twitter, or various other routines, because, I mean, it could be the end of Facebook as we know it. It could be coming to the end. I'm already looking to check out my Bebo account. There's nothing like MySpace and so on. William, just talk us through your schedule so far. I mean, is this day two, day three? How long have you been walking, and how long have you got to walk?
I have been walking 7 days. I started in Oviedo, which is in northern Spain, and this is where Alfonso the Chaste heard the news in the 9th century that some people had discovered the tomb of St. James, and that there'd been this miracle there, this field of stars, which is how you get Santiago de Compostela, St. James Field of the Stars. And so Alfonso the Chaste, he set out to go to this St. James's tomb. And that is the route that I'm taking. It's called the Primitivo. And, it's been a week so far. We get up at about 7:30, 8 o'clock, and we're all in these dorms in these hostels, which are incredibly cheap, 5-10 euros a night. And you can easily do this on 20 euros a day. And I've got another week to go, I guess.
Is this something that you're thinking about for your family, Darren? A possible sort of treat for the team to sort of work through?
Well, I'm delighted that he's staying in hardened accommodation each day. I assume it is hardened. It's not just tents, these hostels and stuff, because you need that rest, definitely. I mean, that's 14 days of trekking. That's very impressive. That's a long way.
It's amazing how quickly you toughen up, though. The first 3 days were pretty hard going, but now I feel like, 20 miles, no problem. And so I trot along with my 10-kilo rucksack on my back, and a few blisters, but everything's fine so far.
And has anybody actually wimped out as yet? Has anybody said, I can't take it anymore, where's my chauffeur when I need them?
What has happened is that Some of the people have, like today, two of the girls who have been accompanying me, I met them in just outside Oviedo, they got a taxi because one of them had dodgy feet and the other couldn't be bothered because it was so wet. So that's fine. You do whatever you want to do.
At the end of the day, you want to force these things because there are obviously health and safety issues there. People are listening to this want to find out more details. How can they find out about this? I mean, do you sign up? Is it like a sort of a cook's tour sign of things? It just goes, no, I feel spiritually moved. How do you get involved with this if people want to say, I want to follow in William Coles's footsteps?
There's a whole load of stuff on the net about these pilgrims' routes. I mean, it depends how long you've got. If you want to spend 6 weeks doing it, you can do the French route or the Northern route. I reckon there must be about 50 different routes. This route that I'm on, the Primitivo, if you just there's a whole load of stuff on the net about it. And all you have to do is just fly out to Oviedo, and there's direct flights from Heathrow. Then you get yourself along to the cathedral, and they will give you a pilgrim's passport, which gets you into all these very cheap hostels. And you can buy your scallop shell there for €2, and then off you go. You're on your way. There's nothing more to it than that.
I think that's it then, Kasia. We can add that to the list of location reports we'll be doing, and we'll do the San Diego walk in the not too distant future. Yeah. Not to be confused, of course, with the Lambeth walk, which is something completely different. In a matter of moments, who knows what could happen. I mean, if we see the pearly kings and queens going off to Spain, we'll know that they've been listening. In a few moments, we'll be connecting both film writer and producer and director Darren Scales with, of course, his RAF days. Because when Darren and I first met, he was RAF Waddington, with indeed Equipping the Army for the Great War by Phil Hamlin-Williams. See what we've done there? Marvellous. But Darren, would you like to put those last two questions to our main man in Spain at present, William Coles?
Oh my goodness, I've tripled down. So have you enjoyed chatting with us on the midweek drive?
Yes, I have indeed. Thank you so much for asking.
And would you like to come back sometime in the future?
Yes, I mean, next week I might even be in Santiago. I can report with tears in my eyes from the cathedral there.
Mission accomplished.
Tears in your eyes, flowers in the rain. Just for you, William. And Hugo.
Woke up one morning half asleep with all my blankets in a heap and yellow roses scattered all around. The time was still approaching for I couldn't stand it anymore. Upon my eider down. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the rain. Feel the power of the rain making the garden grow. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the rain. Feel the power of the rain keeping me cool. So I lay upon my side with all the windows open wide. Couldn't pressurize my head from speaking. Hoping not to make a sound, I push my head into the ground. Time to catch the sight that I was seeking. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the rain. Feel the power of the rain making the garden grow. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the rain. Feel the power of the rain keeping me cool. If this perfect pleasure has the key, then this is how it has to be. If my dinner is getting wet, I don't see that it matters much to me.
104 years ago, in August 1914, Kitchener's contemptible little army was highly professional but small and equipped with only what it could carry. Facing it was a force of continental proportions, heavily armed and well supplied. The task of equipping the British army was truly Herculean, but had to be undertaken by the ordinary men and women left behind after all able men were called up to fight in the trenches. Cashar, I was saying before we came into the studio that this site about 100 years ago was being tested by World War I tanks. And there we are. It fits in perfectly with Phil Hamlyn Williams, Equipping the Army for the Great War, a book which is going to be coming out very, very soon, I believe.
That's right, on the 1st of June.
2018. So share with us, why did you decide to actually focus on ordnance, equipping the British Army for the Great War?
OK, we go back to May 2014. And I went up into the loft, and I took down two very large boxes full of scrapbooks. Now, these scrapbooks my mum had kept of my father's Second World War. And I'd always known they were there, but I'd never really looked in them. But that May, I started reading them. And what I found was an astonishing story of how the army was mechanised in World War II. I got the bit between my teeth, did some more research, and that resulted in a book called War on Wheels, which was published September 2016. Now, having written that book, I had loads of questions. Many of the people who figured in War on Wheels, including my own father, had served in the First World War as well. They had obviously experienced a lot and learnt a lot, and I needed to dig. So I dug.
Did a lot of research in
archives. There were some very good contemporary accounts, because that's what you really want. And the result is this book called Ordnance. And ordnance is everything from an 18-inch gun to a sock.
A sock.
Okay. All this. I think the sock is about the smallest item.
That's what really would have won the war, of course. Yeah.
Well, you say that. If you were in the trenches in France, the daily arrival of dry socks, which happened towards the end of the war, was an absolute godsave. And it was a local convent who used to launder them. All these little snippets you pick up.
It's Darren, any thoughts for yourself? Again, obviously, your RAF, which is celebrating its centenary this year, so great news on that.
It's always good to hear about these new books that come out, because as much as we think we know so much about history and what happened in these wars and stuff, there's always something else to be found out. I used to be based at Northolt, where the RAF archives are, and you could pop in there and just go to a random area and look at something, and you just learn something new and pick something up, and then you join the pieces together, and then suddenly you get a new story or a new experience. And the technology changes, obviously. Yeah. You know, modern warfare is different, but you know, the people are often still the same. And you know, like you say, the sock, for example, is, I can imagine, just, you know, spending all the time in the trenches and sodden wet and all the rest of it, and then, you know, something like that just kind of makes all the difference.
It does.
Yeah.
Now, this is available, as you said, Phil, from the 1st of June. And you can even have autographed copies as well, if you wish.
You certainly can. I did my first talk on it on Monday to the Western Front Association up at the Barracks on Burton Road. And they seemed to enjoy it, or at least they said so.
PhilWilliamsWriter.co.uk.
That's right.
Place to sort out. Kasia, any thoughts for yourself? I mean, clearly, your generation has been saved or spared the joys of warfare and such like. Any thoughts on Phil's Equipping the Army for War ordnance?
I think it's fascinating. And like Dan said, I think it's such an important time to remember. And as we get further on from the First World War and Second World War, people's kind of memories and things get forgotten. And I think that's when, yes, as simple as perhaps going into looking at an old book of photos or something from a granddad or a great granddad. And I think if we kind of all dig around for things like that, it's kind of amazing what you can find.
Mm. Excellent stuff. In a few moments, we'll be talking to Annette Andre, live from San Diego, with one of her audio missives. Still to come, we've got Steve Dickinson with information on Sci-Fi Scarborough that's coming up. And Tessa Snart will be connecting with us, hopefully via Skype, but the technical challenges we've had in the studio these days, I don't know, it may well be a phone link. We've got Louis Savvy from Sci-Fi London as well, as Phil Leonis. So lots of things to keep us busy as the time now is simply 22 and a half minutes past 5 p.m.
And top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive.
And it's a delight as ever, as we've both kind of shared this whole notion of springing forward. I think you're on daylight saving time, we're on daylight saving time, springtime, summertime. Well, in San Diego, it's currently 25 past nine, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. And the sun is shining and it's warming up very nicely.
Excellent. Before we go into your audio missive, I believe, wasn't it due to the First World War, Phil, that effectively we had this daylight saving time put into place
in the first place?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen it once.
Well, Phil Hamlin-Williams, author of the text Ordnance Equipping the British Army for the Great War, which is released on the 1st of June 2018. We also have Darren Scales, ace filmmaker, and indeed the wonderful Kesha Nicklin, who also worked with Darren on the grand movie, which was entitled...
Dark Wave, Edge of the Storm.
Dark Wave. Almost the perfect movie. Would have been the perfect movie if only you'd got Annette Andre in there as well. Anyway, what would you like to share with us on this pre-Easter audio telephonic link with you from San Diego, Annette?
Whose life is it anyway? I recently read the obituary of a man who spent more than 70 years claiming to be the illegitimate son of the American composer George Gershwin. And from the accompanying photographs of both men at the same ages, there is a startling and remarkable likeness. Even under the most intense scrutiny, the images appear to be that of twins and not, as generations of George Gershwin's relatives have claimed, a con man looking to cash in on an uncanny but skin-deep resemblance to their famous kin. This man's single-minded pursuit of identity is particularly relevant to me now as I'm about to publish my memoir. I've spent the last few years immersed in recording my life in what I hope will be an entertaining and informative journey in print. But it's also been a search and rescue operation as I attempted to reconcile fact from fiction. I've discovered that memory can be a movable feast. Things that you wished were true, often on reflection, are just that, wishful thinking. And after decades of living a public life, an uncomfortable but unavoidable question remains. Whose life is it anyway? In a long career as an actor, I've played hundreds of roles, makeup, costumes, and a talent for shape-shifting, transforming me into a tomboy and a queen, the wife of a ghost, and a lady of the evening. Each time out, I become that character. Annette André has vanished, or so I hoped. In medical circles, I'd be tagged a delusional. In my world, I could wish for an Oscar. In the telling, Alan Gershwin's account of his life could be the plot of a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, for all the twists and turns that claim to be fact or fiction, depending on who's doing the telling. Gershwin, who died in 1937 at 38, never married but was involved with a good number of women. So it's not inconceivable, as Alan Gershwin claimed, that in 1926 he was born to a woman who had a long-time affair with the composer. Bent on keeping his birth secret, Gershwin's lyricist brother Ira placed the baby with a couple named Schneider and swore them to secrecy. Well, that was Alan's version and one he clung to over the years. Even his DNA tests proved that he had no relationship to the man he claimed fathered him. From the time he mustered out of the army after World War II, Alan changed his name from Schneider to Gershwin and began a relentless campaign for recognition as a member of the Gershwin clan and a legitimate heir to a portion of the composer's millions. And he had a legion of believers who supported him, the facts notwithstanding. Not only did he bear a jaw-dropping resemblance to George, he had an encyclopedic knowledge of the music, theater productions, and film scores that Gershwin had created. He also claimed to have inherited his father's musical talents as well, writing such songs as, "I want a humdinging, bell-ringing, singing and swinging love," among the 500, 800, or 1,500 others he turned out, depending on which story you read. None seemed to have been recorded, even though Alan said publicly that Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra were great fans of his work. Over the long span of years living as a Gershwin, Alan never held a full-time job, but made his living off his self-proclaimed celebrity. Interviewed all over the world, he even walked the red carpet at the Cannes Film Festival for years. On French television, millions of viewers watched as he descended a spiral staircase to a full orchestra playing Rhapsody in Blue. Alan's long-running career as the son of a famous man wasn't unique. There have been many others who laid claim to being famous by riding on the coattails of the truly famous. But that was his life, the choice he made to wake up each day of his 91 years as someone who arrived on the scene fully formed, with no ambition to be anything but his father's son. After reading of this man's singular commitment, my first instinct was to judge his life as a tragic waste, a willful impersonation to avoid creating his own destiny. But then I thought, well, hang on, that's exactly what I've done for the better part of my life. Each time out, assuming the identity of someone else, and counting myself successful if I vanish into the character. I'm reluctant to admit that the distance between the man who called himself Alan Gershwin and me is razor thin, when you consider whose life is it anyway?
Brilliant. Brilliant. Darren, when you were directing Dark Wave, did any of your actors, and I'm thinking Shane Rimmer here, actually believe that they were that character?
Well, that's something that was really important to me, and Shane was excellent for that. And one thing I learned, especially working with Shane, he was more interested in telling me about the world that his character Anderson was in and what he was going through, rather than about how, you know, he should be feeling and stuff like that. Which, you know, to those that have, you know, veteran actors and stuff like that will know that anyway. But for me, having to work with someone of his stature was like, right, okay. And it was great because I knew the answer. I'd really thought about Anderson and stuff. And we just chatted for 15, 20 minutes just about the world that he was going to be occupying for those brief moments that he was going to be on screen. And it made such a difference. I mean, and just like we heard, Shane wasn't on the screen anymore. It was Captain Anderson, you know, this long-lost father stranded across the galaxy, you know, thousands of light years away.
Every evening on the Horror Channel at 8 p.m. UK time, you can see Annette Andre and Randolyn Hopkirk deceased as Jeannie Hopkirk, and she is Jeannie Hopkirk. That's the bottom line. It's quite clear. There's no messing about it. Shameless plug, yes, the TV series is actually out there doing its stuff, and rightly so. So great material there. Phil, any questions for yourself or Annette?
Well, I'm just intrigued by the whole idea, because to an extent, I guess, we all spend our lives being variations of ourselves.
Currently, we're doing a good job at actually impersonating radio.
Well, we are pretending. We are pretending.
I think that's true. I think we do. But I think then, of course, it's reinforced when you actually have to go ahead and change into someone else. You know, it's go out, take off the makeup, put more on, different clothes, and suddenly you're someone else. And I've actually managed to do that sort of thing if I've been somewhere where I'm not comfortable, a big party where I didn't know too many people, maybe a lot of professionals there or whatever, and I've had to go in, brace myself. And I usually think about someone else and think, no, I'll be Betty Davis tonight, or I'll be, you know, Audrey Hepburn, or someone who isn't me, because I don't want to go in there. And I may not have the clothes and the makeup as such, but I can will myself to walk in as somebody else.
Kasia, when you were doing your postgraduate work with the Shopping Channel, I know, it's amazing, but there we are. Did you ever sort of feel, I need to get in touch with my inner me to actually produce this whole system?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of kind of changing how you think about portraying products to the public. And it is kind of, you sort of go into TV mode, just as I suppose an actress goes into, oh, this is me acting for a different character.
Mm.
For TV, it's you're there to ultimately sell a product, and you have to work as a whole team to kind of drive that. So there is an element of kind of stepping into sort of someone else for the moment that, you know, you're kind of on air and selling.
Whether it's
Well, you have to, because you don't go around all day selling products to people. So when
I don't know. I mean, Kasia's sort of pretty good. I mean, she be, all right. In sort of half an hour here, she was saying, "Would you like to buy this?" That wonderful sort of system there. But I suppose it takes the whole aspect of Bertolt Brecht and Stanislavski to whichever way you go, method, or do you go distanciation? It's a whole new world. And as ever, you've just touched base perfectly with respect to the whole thing. Any final thoughts, Darren?
Well, I was just thinking that. Cash talked about being someone else. That Cash did the marketing for the Dark Wave and got us up to for Edge of the Storm over 500,000 views. And the way she did that was about thinking about the audience and stepping into their shoes and thinking how they think. So it's not so much perhaps acting, but it's understanding how other people are and how they might behave and what they want to know and what they want to see and when they want to see it. I think stepping into other people's shoes has a really broad context into where you can actually apply that. And the better you can do it, I think the more people will be attracted to what it is you're trying to either tell them, sell them, or show them.
And doubtless we'll be speaking to Phil Lewis about his views on the lawsuit of the week, Olivia de Havilland, who is effectively still trying to actually sue to prevent people actually interpreting her role as a somewhat negative person, really. She's only 101, you know, it's understandable for her.
Spring chicken.
I think so, exactly.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This is all a bit...
Oh, Olivia de Havilland, 101 years of age, has decided that she doesn't like the way she's been portrayed in a TV series, so she's suing the directors.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I'm yes. up with you now, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, hence the reason it's going to be really delicate when we finally decide who's going to portray Annette André in the Annette André life story. All sorts of
it. Oh, my. They'll need someone very special.
Okay, exactly. Exactly so. There's a casting routine to be there. We'll wait for that. Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this pre-Easter special?
Yes, I have. I have, of course.
So I take it...
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name in the studio there with the dark wave.
That would be Darren Scales.
Dan Scales.
Darren, well, Darren.
Darren Scales.
Exactly.
Beg your pardon.
Or Daz.
Darren.
That's fine.
Exactly.
And is this on television or is it internet? What is it?
No, you can check it out at if you search Dark Wave Edge of the Storm, it turns up.
I tell
up
you
on
what,
Google,
Annette, but, what I'll do is I will ask Darren to send me the link, which I will then send to your good self and I'll electronic, and then you can watch it, and then when you return to us in April, we can actually have a little discussion about how you found Dark Wave.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck with it all anyway, Darren.
Thanks, thank you.
It'll be over a million views from that point of view. So thumbs up from Casher as well. So it's great stuff there. And we have the Royal Air Force Swing Wing now with specially dedicated to Annette André with respect to the Gershwin connection, Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh, that's good.
singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Yeah, over the years I've felt that what Eva needs for her entrance is more of the Royal Air Force swing wing interpretation of Gershwin, really. Isn't that right, Eva MacDonald?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
So where do we find you today, Eva, which is where we'll find you pretty much for the entire duration of the spring and summer, working your proverbials off to entertain the public and the general audiences that are out there?
Well, I'm currently in Mablethorpe, although you could also say it's a little place called Saltfleet, but most people would know it as Mablethorpe.
Ah, Mablethorpe, Phil. You're nodding sagely.
Oh,
familiar.
Happy days.
Happy days, exactly. Mablethorpe, Darren, any thoughts of...
Yeah, I went to Mablethorpe many years ago and remember...
Left very soon?
No, I had a great time. I was sitting on the beaches, which was a bit boring, and then a whole pile of RAF aeroplanes started flying over, and apparently it was a route to a range or something.
Did that inspire you to join the organisation?
Yeah, it was nice. Nice and noisy. Everyone complaining about it except me. I loved it. It was great.
I've not been to the beach yet, so I've yet to go there.
Oh, you've got to.
Well, yes, it's very long.
Very long.
It was nice on the first 2 days of the sweep, but then it went horrible again. So I was going to go on the third day, but the weather said no.
Well, you know, if the weather says no, you know, it's not like your William Coles walking through Hurricane Hugo in Spain. You're in Mablethorpe trying to entertain the public. So how's it going? What are you doing? You already said that you're working a lot harder this year than you were last year from that perspective. And Darren, I think you're interested in finding out how the knives were last year when she had knives thrown at her.
Intriguing. Tell me more.
What about the knives?
Yeah. Why are people throwing knives at you? Is this some sort of...
Well, greetings in Mablethorpe.
Right, okay. That didn't happen to me when I was there. It was much more pleasant, so...
Well, last year, it was there was a visiting act, and it was he was a magician, and he wanted a trooper, we're known as a trooper, which is one of the entertainment staff, to come up and help him with his set. So I had to ride a unicycle on stage, and I also had to lie down on stage whilst he walked over me and juggled knives.
That's terrifying.
Very.
And you thought your degree was tough, Kasia.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another level, really, isn't it?
So, yeah, that's not something you do every day in your job.
But good news is, next movie, Daz, we've got a stunt woman for you already for you.
Definitely.
And meanwhile...
The greatest showwoman.
Yeah, that's what you did there. Nicely done. And meanwhile, how are the things occurring for you this year? And what sort of things are you doing this year?
Yeah, but they're going well, thank you. I've already done my first cabaret set. That was on Sunday, just gone. And then I'm doing another cabaret set tomorrow. And we're doing our first production show on Sunday, Easter Sunday, so that's something to look forward to. Yeah. And I've been presenting a lot at the and doing a lot of the daytime activities as well. So part of the job is to do a lot of presenting and part of the job is to do a lot of performing. It's a mixture of both. So that's what I've been up to.
And keep the public happy and satisfied on that basis.
Yes, and host everything.
The typical day, are we talking 12 hours, 15 hours? I'm just sort of thinking, is it comparable? I mean, share with us your shifts at the Shopping Channel, please, Kesha.
Yes, my shifts are very long indeed. So my early shifts start at 5:30 in the morning and end at about 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then my late shifts are 12:30, ending at 1 a.m. So they're kind of long 12-hour days. Yeah. Yeah.
So is that similar to what's happening in Mablethorpe for yourself?
Yeah, I think, it feels about 500. But it's probably about the same. So you do the morning activities, which is 9:30, although I could always come in for 9:15, and then it goes on till about 12:30, and then you don't come in again until 5:15 to host Linked Bingo, and then you do the whole evening all the way through till whatever time that could be. So at the moment it's only 10:30 because it's not peak season. Next week it would be probably 11:30, finishing at 12:00. So.
Well, as we've said this year, we've promised we will endeavour to have a midweek drivette location report with you. So we'll bring socks. There'll be dry socks, obviously, because we have our
oil
specialist here.
Bring some good clothes.
It's one of those areas that is very critical from that point
of view.
So, I mean, are you free for the rest of the evening, or is it a case of no? I'm going to actually sort of prepare for another set on the stage in a few moments.
No, I'm just presenting tonight, presenting the children's game shows.
You see, that would strike terror and sort of fear through many people's hearts, myself included. You know, so, how do you deal with an obstreperous child? I mean,
you have knives, don't you?
So knives. No, basically, like, you just dare to present, and obviously, if they don't want to join in, then that's their choice, and their parents would probably sort that out, because we're there to entertain, not to be their teacher.
Exactly, we're there to entertain, not to be a teacher. Not implying, of course, that teachers can't also be entertaining, because I'd hate to actually sort of cause I would like to feel a certain sort of aspect and fizz that you actually give to your entertaining side of things as well.
Very true, I have done that. Mm. Done the teaching side as well.
Well, we're going to hopefully connect with Tessa Snott in the very near future. She sent a Skype link to us. We may connect via Skype. We may actually simply connect with Steve Dickinson. Who knows? But if Tessa's listening to this, oh my word, all sorts of magical pings going on there. Darren, you did this so well. Would you like to ask those last two questions to Eva MacDonald one more time, please?
Yes. Did you enjoy taking part today in the midweek drive?
I've really enjoyed it, thank you. It's been very good.
Excellent. And can we look forward to you coming back sometime in the very near future?
Of course, I would love it. It'd be great.
Fabulous.
Mirror always echoes in a kind of mirror. I couldn't believe, Daz, that you were saying that they only want one hit. What, Dalla had more than one? It had several hits, actually.
Well, I can only think of just the one. I just remember him dancing around in his white jeans and his blonde hair, and then I think he was on Big Brother or Celebrity or something, and he kept going on about Mirror Mirror or something, and that was it. And he kind of revived his career for about 5 seconds, and then he disappeared again. But you know, you're the oracle, Alex. You clearly know more about it than I do. I could only think of that one song. I was convinced he was a one hit wonder. I sit corrected.
Oh, well, it's not a competition. You know, it's simply a case of actually connecting from that perspective. Much as actually using Skype to connect with Tessa Snott happens to be a challenge in many ways. Tessa, are you indeed there, and can you hear us? That doesn't sound too good. That doesn't sound too healthy at all in any way, shape or form. We'll say once again, Tessa Snott, can you hear us at all? Have we got Tessa Snott? Is she communicating? No. You see, you put your trust in technology like that, and suddenly you're left bereft from that perspective. You think, what could actually happen from that particular perspective? We got a text. I mean, I could relay her text messages, but it's not quite the same thing, is it, really? And she's connecting from that basis. We will call her via her mobile number, which might actually get us beyond an answer phone. And similarly with Steve Dickinson. Meanwhile, lots of great things happening as far as the Drill Hall is actually concerned. Phil Hamlin-Williams, we've talked about your book as well. That's kind of connected. But what exciting things are coming up as far as the Drill Hall are concerned in this grand week that we've been putting together and as we look through the Easter vacation and so on?
Well, I think the first one is on Easter Sunday. And this
April
is
April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day, Easter Sunday. And this is all about, for me, the past being another country. Because Easter Sunday, when I was a boy, was go to church, hunt for an Easter egg and have lunch. Now you can go to the amazing Bubble Man at the Drill Hall. And this is a fantastic act. It is about science and it is about art. It is investigating the properties of bubbles and is huge fun and kids absolutely love it.
The Bubble Man.
The amazing Bubble Man.
I'm almost speechless there, Phil, for a moment.
I would actually rather like to go and see it.
I think, I mean, because I was, I mean, do you remember the days we used to make those soap bubbles? So you can have these, and they're bubble artists.
Yeah.
Is it Bubble Man from that point of view?
You're getting too technical.
Is that right?
Stand inside a bubble, can't you?
He's staying inside. Yeah,
that's called zorbing.
Oh, yeah. Is it? Right, okay.
The art of zorbing, wandering through the line from that. Kasia, bubbles? Do we just live in a bubble? Is that a boiling bubble?
Kind of life is a metaphor for a bubble. I used to have bubbles a lot when I was a child. I always used to remember going down the town, and if there were...
Is that what you used to entertain yourself with in
Bury
St Edmunds?
Yes, down the town,
some bubbles.
That's what happens there. But there was always be people outside shops, the toy shops, blowing these bubbles, and it was, you know, as a child, it's fascinating. And it's
trying to join them together, that's the thing. If you can get, like, not just one bubble, I expect this is what the amazing bubble
probably does,
that he can actually get a whole massive group of bubbles to stick together and stay together before they start popping and all the rest of it, which is very frustrating.
Hours of fun.
Frustrating for me. I was never that good at it. I think my mum diluted the bubbles.
She'd
buy like one pot of bubble mix, and then I and my brother as well, and then suddenly there'd be like two glasses of bubble mix, you know. And I thought she did, because the thing is, the bubbles are never strong enough.
I think bubble technology has come on. Last Friday, I was still in Spain with my grandchildren, and I took one granddaughter down to the park. Now, in Valencia, you have a park, by every block. There are loads and loads of swings and slides.
Yeah.
And Friday night, frankly, everyone is there. You've got mums and dads and kids. And there's my little granddaughter, Cleo, who speaks, fantastic Spanish. You know, she's four. She's just picked it up like anything. So there she is, chatting away with all these kids.
Que sera, sera.
And a dad comes up with, with the bigger bubble.
Oh.
A contraption for giving you a bubble that's, a good foot across.
My word.
Well, you never had that, did you?
No.
Unfortunately.
The bubbles weren't even round. Like the applicator is like an oblong shape, isn't it? It's not. Mm. But bubbles are round. Why wasn't it round?
Well, they should be round, shouldn't they?
They should be.
Yeah.
Is it to fit inside the pot, perhaps? I'm not sure, but I felt a bit cheated.
These are strange things. In case you're wondering what these sort of... It's actually sort of Kasia tapping the table with sort of a voice. She's banging the little table. I thought, earthquake, what's it going? bit of action coming from that point of view. Tessa Snott will hopefully be with us in a few moments. And we haven't given up on Steve Dickinson. And we've got Louis Savvy as well. So inevitably, we need some Paul Simon.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating.